This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
You guys come in when you are ready to go.
Ready to go.
All right.
All set.
Perfect. Well, Gary, it is such a pleasure to be here with you today here at Art Basel. Thank you so much for your time.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, I wanted to start off, for those here at Basel, tell us about V-Scope, you know, this event, and what you want people to walk away with here.
You know, in general, when I do things with my companies, whether it's VaynerX, which is the holding company that has VaynerMedia and Vayner3, which are two of the more prominent people playing at V, or VFriends, which is my intellectual property NFT project. When we do things like Basel or, you know, NBA All-Star or Super Bowl or Cannes or South By, really what I'm always thinking about is how do we reverse engineer a scenario, an activation, a collaboration, or an event space, or that creates serendipity, conversation, relationship building. I think of it from a karma standpoint. I think a lot about intent. I think too many business people and companies, when they're activating at things like this, are too transactional, right? Like, we're gonna do this thing and we're gonna bring our clients and we're gonna get the money. And I just don't think, like, I think humans can sense that. And so I kind of go completely the other way, which is like, how do we do something that brings so much value to anybody that comes? Whether it's a personality that's there to mingle with other brands.
Right.
I mean, I go so extreme as like inviting competitors to see if they can like steal our client. Like, I get that crazy with it. So, you know, what do I think about? Like, what's the punchline? The punchline is, how much karma can you put into the system during a time where a lot of people congregate to the same area?
Sure. And turning to the concept of IP,
yes.
You've been very vocal about that. How do you assign value? What is value when it comes to determining that perceived value from a consumer's perspective of any particular piece of IP that you have, whether it's VFriends, whether it's, you know, this NBA All-Star?
It's the only thing I think about, like your Puma socks. Like, literally, I saw you had Puma socks. And my brain goes to, those are 37 cent socks that he paid $9 for, because it has four letters in the same order with the same logo and it means something. So, you know, for me, that's just how the entire world works. This is a bottle of water. This was free for a drillion years. And then somewhere about 50 years ago, someone's like, wait a minute, I'm gonna sell something that is actually free. And if I can make the brand mean something, people will actually pay a lot of money for something that, to remind everybody, water was free. And every faucet, like, and so I think it's the only thing. I think it's how monarchies or capitalism or democracy or communism or dictators work. I think it's how people parent. All I think about is IP. You know, all I think about is comms and marketing and how things work. And then for me specifically in the journey I'm on, my driver for building out my IP selfishly is about, oh, I think I can build a big business. Selflessly, I think about, if I can create 300 characters in a Pokemon, Sesame Street, Marvel-like world where I can do what I've done for 15 years as Gary V and pushed kindness, patience, empathy. Well, that's been hard. You know, Gary V is a very specific human being who's gonna work for some people and is not gonna work for others. But this patient panda might be more effective of teaching people patience than me. And so for me, I'm really enjoying the building out of the intellectual property, and I want to really leave a legacy. I'm very, very affected as I become more educated on how Jim Henson saw the world and what his Muppets, not only Sesame Street, but Fraggle. Do you know Fraggle Rock's?
Absolutely.
So Fraggle Rock's brief, AKA when it was handed to the woman that started the process of deciding what Fraggle Rock was going to be, the brief, like, what are we trying to accomplish, was stop war. That's profound. And I'm very affected by that, and I think a lot about that. And so I think about IP as something that can really bring a lot of value to both the person that created it and to the people that are using it. For example, Stop War is very like up here, but Puma, I like that there's a brand called Puma that made a sock that, like, for you, it's a form of expression, right? Like, you're, like, all of us are dressed right now to communicate, right?
Sure.
Tattoos to communicate, right? That's a Nintendo reference. Like, that I'm able to understand you more in a hypersecond just by what IP you're communicating to me right now.
We're all walking brands.
100%.
You've said several times. You know, how does that translate to VFriends and scalability and how you are taking this entire portfolio and vault of imagery, nostalgia, and assets to that next level?
It creates a North Star of, like, I have a very good sense of what I'm up to. I desperately want the world to fall in love with Accountable Ant because I think accountability, if you fall in love with it before you're 18, will lead to less anxiety and depression. So it's very clear. Then, to answer your question, then I start thinking about what brand, like, why forthright? I struggled with candor my whole life. I'm doing a very cool collaboration right now with a very cool brand, and it's the Forthright Flamingo. So cool, you could see vintage frames and it's fucking rad and it's fresh and I'm gonna rock it and you could see the VFriends and I've got glasses, Gary V, that's cool to me because I'm an entrepreneur, fine. But over time, it's like, it's the Forthright Flamingo, it's the Forthright Flamingo, and it's like, wait a minute, like, is being forthright a good thing? Oh wow, it is actually if you keep it in balance and you deliver it with kindness. And so, like, there are millions of people around the world like myself who have struggled with candor, which has led to the things that have made them unhappy. And if I can storytell through collaborations, through, you know, sneaker deals and glasses, or more directly, children's books, movies, television, streaming services, toys with QR codes that let you watch a 4-minute video, the Cocomelon execution of all YouTube, the Adult Swim, Rick and Morty execution of television, thing, like Bart Simpson and everything in between, Hello Kitty. Well, then over time, for the back half of my life, the next 47 years of my life, I think I can leave a really meaningful impact. And so I think very vigorously about every collaboration, why, what, how, and who, which character is gonna be my cereal. I think about probably once a week. Once a week, in my day-to-day navigation, I will give 3 minutes to 40 minutes of meaningful time of, like, what's the one? Because I know it's gonna work, because I know how to sell stuff, and I'm gonna do that well, and I'm going to sell cereal, but I need to be very thoughtful of, am I gonna make that a very healthy, clean cereal that may skew for 25-year-old coastal, like, you know, thinkers of food that way, or am I gonna make a sugar cereal that's just a little fun, a little escapism for 9-year-old?
You gotta capture that nostalgia. It's what resonates, right? It's what feels right. We've all grown up with these collectibles, the Pokemon cards, the Hot Wheels, right? And now we have this new technology, NFTs, right? But it's not really different. It's just in a new medium. And I think 100%. Your point is getting rid of the labels to an extent, you know, but still maintaining that tastefulness is something that I feel that you've integrated into everything that you're doing, what you just shared, of you want to extract that cultural feeling that a child, whether they're 8 or 10 years old, feels comfortable with, that they can point to and say, I like this, I don't know why, but I like it, or...
Especially if that 8 or 10 year old's like, I like this, I like this, I like this, oh wait a minute, this attribute of kindness is something I wanna be about.
Right.
Right? For a 25 year old, it might be, you know, it might be cooler like you. For a kid, it might be, I'm interested in this, I don't know why. For a 40-year-old, it might be like, I'm interested in this, I don't know why. To your point, it's all that integration. And so what I'm most excited about is, even before I launched it, I gave a lot of thought to, I'm gonna build a very big universe so I can play with this canvas forever. And so I didn't draw Mickey Mouse and then then later I built Pluto or Daisy Duck. From day one, there was 268 characters because I knew what I wanted to do, which is build a universe that will leave a positive impact in its execution of becoming pop culture.
How does fashion play into the VFriends ecosystem and what you're continuing to build out over time?
I mean, look, I'm like, this is a great answer to this question. First, the humbleness and joy I feel of doing a Hypebeast interview speaks to how fashion plays. Meaning, what does that mean? It means that fashion, like music and sport and religion and a couple of other things, is like one of the most foundational human experiences. I would argue that the singular reason I knew NFTs will play out long term is because fashion and art, 100%. We communicate through the things we buy. So fashion specifically has been probably the place I've been most aggressive. The brand is, VFriends is 18 months old. Reebok, Starter, Kim Shuey, right? Carrots, Vintage Frames. I mean, like, it's disproportionately ahead of almost everything, out of anything else I've done so far. I haven't done as many consumer packaged goods. I haven't done as much content. Fashion collaborations have been the thing that I've been running fastest with, because on strategy, I myself have such a large audience, 15 to 45, many of which like care about fashion. And it's also been really fun personally to put on my collab partners. I also feel that I want to be the best collaboration partner. So to me, whether it's Starter or Carrots or Vintage Frames, I have a very large universe. And the fact that I'm able to bring that relevance and that audience to them excites me. The fact that I'm gonna go downstairs right now and have lines of people who are gonna come for the collaboration, but then they're gonna be like, wait a minute, I like those glasses better than even the VFriends glasses. That's good for Vintage Frames. That makes me happy. So fashion's a fun place. Plus with fashion, and you know this, and definitely the readers of this publication know this, limited is good. And so you're able to do lots of little stuff. It's fun to do a $150 run of this or $1,000 of that. And so it allows for almost like tapas instead of like a big meal. Like it's not like, you could do it quick and but thoughtful, but in 6 months something can be in market in a great way. Whereas when you're thinking about toys like I'm doing, or I mean, animation, it's like a 3-year fucking journey for me. I'm like, oh, be 100. You know, like, you know, so like, so I think that's another reason I gravitate towards it. Speed is an incredibly important thing to me. And I love that through collaborations, we can get into market within a 6 or 9 month period.
So with that, how do you define culture? We all use the word, we all throw it out there, but what does culture mean to you, Gary Vee?
Culture for me, my brain goes to putting the word pop in, like every time it's like, this is culture, and then my brain goes popular pop culture, and then my brain goes popular culture, and what that means to me is people are interested in. You know, I think the word slang today speaks a lot about urban culture, speaks a lot about cool culture, speaks a lot about being a Hypebeast, actually a Hypebeast, but I do think sometimes people miss the bigger macro. So for example, I'll give you a good example. Lately, I've been thinking a lot about how I want to do things with VFriends in fishing culture, right? Like the millions of people who wake up at 5 a.m. across the country and the world and go fishing. And it is the most important thing to them. And so like to me, like, do I want to get fishing boots? And with one of my sea characters, like that's a culture, but I don't think we in a Hypebeast way think of, when we say culture, we don't think that. We don't think hunting and fishing, we think cool. But for a lot of people, hunting and fishing is the coolest. And so like, I remember thinking that video games were gonna be so much bigger than a lot of my friends saw. I just knew, I was like, this is not a thing that is just for kids, because we were growing up with it. And I'm like, why are we still playing this in college? And it's like even more important now than it was when we were 9. I'm like, this is big, this is a culture. So I think of it very macro. So that's how I define it.
Well, it's getting to the why too, right? It's
always to the why. Always to the why.
There needs to be a reason for it. And to that, how do you inject tastefulness in the partnerships, the collaborations that you enter into or bring VFriends into?
I'm not crippled by the concept of tastefulness because I know that it's everyone's subjective opinion. You know, and so one, the way I bring tastefulness is I'm not scared of it. Where I think a lot of people are scared of it.
Sure.
They want it to be tasteful to taste makers. I'm not worried about that. I try to bring tastefulness to the table through intent. I want to make a great product. I want to make something that people really enjoy that they have it. I have no interest in anybody buying it if it's not something that brings them value. So I kind of bring a very strong intent-based energy. And then the tastefulness in the way we define it is like, I have a subjective creative opinion. I think something looks cool. I know that that means millions of others will. I also know that that means millions of others won't think that's cool. And that's fine. And so I think a lot of people are crippled by tasteful, and they become perfectionists, and they become insecure, and they become like crippled, and they don't do shit. You know, to me, as long as I have good intent and value my opinion, while recognizing that that opinion doesn't mean anything to 70% of the world in every subjective call I make, then that's great, that's fine.
Let's talk vintage frames and,
yes.
and the upcoming event today. What's most exciting to you about this and why so many people here?
You know, I think the most exciting thing on the collaboration, like Vintage Frames, their DNA core, like what I really respect them is they come from the streets and hustle of garage sale, flea market, like I do. So that connection was right off the top. The fact that he is still out there going to like, you know, estate sales and like buying seven glass, I just can't resonate with that more. So that was one. Two, I wanted to go into eyewear and play with it. You know, there's a lot of categories I'm gonna play in that I'm not a heavy user of. I don't wear glasses. I don't tend to, like the number one thing most of my friends and family make fun of me for is I don't wear shades in the sun ever. So it wasn't like, oh, I need this for me. I'm like, I may not, but you guys do. And so that was exciting for me. I also spoke to and have spoken to tons of creative individuals in the fashion industry and really wanted to go on my intuition on who would be partners I wanted to work with. One of the things that's interesting about this, because I just spoke to this, this took the longest time.
Why?
Because on the vintage frame side, they wanted it right from their perspective. And what I liked was, even, you know, it's funny, my macro thesis of why I want to do a lot of stuff in fashion collabs is the speed. I liked when I started partnering with them where I could feel like, oh, wait a minute. They're like, no, we're scrapping that whole 3 months that we, I'm like, we are? I liked that I respected their creative process so much that I was comfortable that it took us 6 months or 9 months later than I had in my ideology. The product came out great. The other most exciting part is any excuse I can have to meet up with people that want to go out of their way to say hello to me is something that's interesting to me. So I'll have my hardest core fans, you know, down there. Like there's absolutely a group of 10 to 50 individuals that make me feel like I'm the Grateful Dead or fish. I'm like, they're everywhere, they're at everything. And it's just like, I don't even know how to express in words, even though I'm a pretty solid communicator, what it feels like when people will go out of their way to show up anywhere and everywhere you are publicly to, you know, get a few more minutes to say hello, to ask a question, to take their 19th selfie. It's profoundly humbling. And then equally, because that's over here, equally sending a text the last couple days to the 10,000 people that live within a 30-mile radius of this location, which is actually roughly the numbers I have on my community text community, the amount of people that replied of like, this is gonna be the first time I'm ever gonna see you because I've not been able to travel or I can't afford to go to VCon or go to the sports card convention in New Jersey. I just happen to live 20 minutes from here. I can't wait to see you. That is profoundly exciting for me. So on those two extremes, I get very excited, which is why I tend to probably do a lot of public events. And that is very exciting about this collaboration. That was very important to me of like, when we're talking through, it's not just like we're gonna sell this on .com. Let's have an in-person portion of this. Oh wait, your HQ is Miami? Oh wait, Basel is a big part of NFT culture? Oh, let's aim for doing something in December, and now here we are.
Absolutely. My last two questions for you. If you could change anything about the law surrounding IP and digital collectibles, what would you want to see changed? If anything.
You know, IP I'm very comfortable with. I think that's established law for a long time. I think with digital collectibles, I'm empathetic to the government. I think humans just really love to shit on governments. I'm just empathetic. I'm aware why we don't have clarification of law. It's called innovation is faster than government. But what would I like to see? I would like to see in the next half decade very clear laws from the sovereign nations around the world on how they are looking to handle an NFT. Specifically for me, because that's where I have my passion, but cryptocurrency, like, let's get some thoughtful, logical, common sense laws around the world so that operators, entrepreneurs, governments, established businesses can start moving faster, because when it's gray, people are not sure what to do.
Right. For those that may be attending Art Basel for the first time, or the younger generations that are finally taking an interest in art for the first time, what advice do you have for them as they come into your event in this week, you know, this weekend festival? What mindset should they be focused on?
Two things stand out. One, even for the most introverted, challenge yourself to say hello to as many people as possible. The number one ROI of things like Basel, Cannes, South by Southwest is the serendipity of relationship. And that is even more profound now because we're just getting out of a COVID era, right? Where for 2 years, there was no serendipity. We were very efficient, like this meeting, that meeting, this meeting. But the stumbling into somebody and becoming friends or business associates was eliminated. So if you're coming here, try not to just run in the same circles, expand your circles and challenge yourself to say hello to somebody. And if they don't reciprocate, that's an indication on them, not you. Don't feel bad because somebody shoos you off or like hurts your feelings. Don't have your feelings hurt when somebody's not kind. That means they're not in a good place. That's number one. Number two, when it comes to art for youngsters, NFTs, physical art, collectibles, sneakers, stop buying shit based on other people's opinions. Do not buy things to keep up with the Joneses. Do not buy things because everybody else thinks Andy Warhol's cool. You think Andy Warhol's cool. If you think Andy Warhol's, I'll give you a good one. I think Jackson Pollock is shit. Now, do I really? I'm saying that a little bit to be like a little hyperbolized. In a more truthful way, I can't wrap my head around spending $100 million for a Jackson Pollock painting. I can't wrap my head around spending $10,000 for something that looks like a Jackson Pollock because I don't like that style. But I may like a different style. And so I think people have to get more comfortable liking what they like. Don't buy a V friend because Gary V, like buy a V friend if you actually just like it. Like I'm into empathy and the empathy elephant speaks to me and I like doodles. I actually like that style of art more than something that's more polished. Or buy a World of Women or buy an X copy or buy, you know, a Robert Nava physical. Like buy what you like for as long as humanly possible. Because then it will become your natural place and that will be far more joyful than keeping up with the Joneses and needing a Rashid because everyone has a Rashid painting or needing a Bored Ape because everybody cool. Like that puts people in bad places. That's the reason people buy Mercedes and Birka bags when they don't really even want it. They're just using it to signal and usually it's a signal of insecurity.
Well, it's that why, you know, even for lawyers, yes. It's getting to the why. And if yes. You don't know your why, you don't have
you're
the
finished.
Direction and you're 100%. Just wasting time, money, and resources.
That's right.
Gary, I want to thank you so much for
thank
your
you,
time.
Thank you, brother.
Appreciate it.
Cheers.